Hi, everybody. As President and as your Commander-in-Chief, I've worked to make sure you have the strategy, the resources, and the support you need to complete the missions our nation asks of you. And every time you've met your responsibilities and performed with extraordinary professionalism, skill, and courage. Unfortunately, Congress has not fulfilled its responsibility. It's failed to pass a budget, and as a result, much of our government must now shut down until Congress funds it again.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe des AstroGeo Podcast. Heute mit einem ganz aktuellen Thema. Ich habe mich ja in der letzten Ausgabe ausführlich mit dem Faldrian über die Mars-Mission von Curiosity unterhalten. Dabei handelt es sich ja um eine NASA-Mission, die auch immer noch aktiv ist. Und das US-Wissenschaftssystem, wie auch generell alle öffentlichen Einrichtungen in den USA, liegen ja gerade brach. Also die Mitarbeiter der öffentlichen Hand in den Vereinigten Staaten sind gerade alle auf Zwangsurlaub, weil der Haushalt auf Eis liegt. Und was für Auswirkungen das speziell auf den Wissenschaftsbetrieb und für die unbemannte Raumfahrt hat, wollte ich gerne mal aus erster Hand erfahren. Und deswegen habe ich mich verabredet mit Dawn Sumner an der University of California in Davis. Und was sie macht, das erzählt sie am besten gleich am Anfang.
Yeah, we usually say geobiologist. I'm interested in how life interacts with Earth and particularly microbial communities like bacteria. Bacteria invented oxygenic photosynthesis, and it's because of these cyanobacteria that we have oxygen in the atmosphere. So a lot of my work is related to how life evolved on Earth and how the evolution of life has changed the chemistry of Earth.
And how did you come to this subject?
I started in graduate school. I was really interested in ocean chemistry, and I was working on some rocks that are 2.5 billion years old. And when looking at those rocks, there was a whole suite of them with little bits of organic matter in them that were made by some of these microbial communities. And it was very clear from the textures in those rocks that the microbes had changed the way the crystals formed. The calcite crystals were growing on the mats, and depending on the geometry of the microbial community, which is what we call the mats, the crystals formed or they didn't form. And that really got me into thinking about how life influences the local chemistry and then the larger scale chemistry, in particular the importance of oxygen and how elements like iron are distributed on Earth, and sulfur and other very important elemental cycles.
Okay, so as I understand it, you came from the part of geology and maybe chemistry, and you got into biology?
Yes, so I consider myself mostly a geologist. I really like doing field work, going out and looking at rocks and the relationships between them. But I work very closely with biologists who understand the details of the processes that go on within biological systems.
Mm-hmm. So just want to get an idea what you're working on. So what is your usual day? So what do you do in your current work?
I'm a professor of geology at the University of California, Davis. And my usual work has shifted in the last couple of years because I've been very involved in the Mars rover Curiosity and operating that rover on Mars. And so my day is now filled a great deal with helping decide what we should do with the rover on Mars, in addition to teaching and advising students. And then I have a second project that happens in big chunks, which is research in Antarctica, looking at modern microbial communities growing in some of the lakes there.
Mm-hmm. Is there some kind of interaction between these two fields of research?
There is in some way. So my main focus for decades now has been how life interacts with Earth. For the Mars work, one of the reasons I'm on the team is the expertise I've developed to identify how to find the evidence of microbial communities and their chemical effects is very important for evaluating whether or not Mars could have once supported life, or even whether or not there are any signatures that life once existed on Mars. So I'm not looking at things, we haven't found anything yet that's indicative of the presence of past life on Mars, but we use the same research skills and sort of theories and ideas to look for that evidence.
So there are these two environments, Mars and Antarctica, and there you see some similarities between these two.
Yes. So in Antarctica, we're working in a place that's a desert. It's very dry for Earth. It would be very wet for Mars. And it's very cold. And the only life there, in the parts we're working at, are these microbial communities. And so we're looking at how those communities grow in these isolated environments to try to understand how the processes of life actually produce the signatures that we might see in the rock record. And in part, some of the environments in Antarctica might be like some of those on early Mars. The area is very cold and these lakes are covered in ice, and that changes the way that sand and mud gets distributed in the lakes. And those are things that the sedimentary structures or the relationships that those processes produce are things that we can look for on Mars to try to understand if there were actually lakes there, for example, and whether or not they might have been covered in ice, and get many more clues about what the environments on Mars were like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but the main topic of our talk, unfortunately, today will be the shutdown of the U.S. government, and also all the U.S. employees, which get their salaries from state, as I understand it, were sent home. So there are plenty of people right now who cannot work in the moment. So how does it affect your work? So do you get your salary right now?
I'm paid by the University of California, and so I am getting my salary. And I feel very lucky to have a job at a university. Many of my colleagues are government employees, and they are not getting their salaries at the moment, and they're not supposed to work, even though they are very interested and excited about the science. They're supposed to be at home twiddling their thumbs.
Okay, so they're not allowed even to do it in their like free time without salary.
Yeah, they're supposed to not do it, although I know that some of them are.
Okay.
Because they love their work.
Mm-hmm. And how does it affect your daily work life? So is it more difficult when you just look into maybe some projects you're working on?
Yeah, so the Mars Curiosity rover project is going along fine. We are still operating the rover. We can't do any news announcements or things like that with the government shutdown, but we can still use the rover to its full functionality. Some of the people who are supposed to help make the decisions and run the rover are not working, and so those of us who are still allowed to work are taking up that slack, but that's not a particularly big problem. The biggest impact the shutdown has had on me is that one of my students and I were supposed to leave for Antarctica. My student was supposed to leave on Sunday, and I was supposed to leave 2 days from now. And the U.S. Antarctic program is completely suspended at this point. So all our plans are on hold. And we were planning to be in Antarctica for 3 months doing some very extensive field work. And at least some of that is not going to be recoverable. It's going to have to be canceled because we can only do the work in the late spring or early summer. Once there's enough meltwater, for example, midsummer, we can't actually do the work on one of the lakes because it just gets slushy in their puddles and just it's logistically impossible.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't you do it in 1 year later?
Well, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, whether or not the field work is just canceled this year or whether it will be delayed. We were funded to go for 2 years, this year and next year, and so we are expecting to be able to go next year. One of our projects was to put in sediment traps. We were going to put them into the lake before there was any meltwater and that this year and pull them out next year. And we don't know if we're going to have two field seasons yet to do that. And in terms of my student, that data would be too late to be part of his thesis, although he does have plenty of other things to work on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You just said that the case of Curiosity is right now, the rover is working, and all the science team around is also able to work. Or is it just a very reduced staff which can work right now?
Most of the staff can work. So it's run through the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which is a contractor to NASA, but it's run through the California Institute of Technology. And as of now, there are plenty of funds to keep paying the core engineering staff to keep Curiosity operational and safe. And we haven't heard anything about there being any risk to that at all. So I think that that project is really quite secure. The people we're missing are the people who work, for example, the United States Geological Survey or NASA headquarters or the Smithsonian Institute, who get their paychecks directly from the federal government, and they're not allowed to work.
Okay.
And so we're missing a few key people, but it's not damaging the mission at mm-hmm. this point.
Yeah, as I read in your blog, you wrote shutdown has yet to affect Curiosity operations. So do you see some point in the future where this could happen?
If the U.S. government does not reopen and become functional in the sort of midterm, we can't continue to operate things like this. I think we have enough buffer that I hope that our lawmakers will have enough sense to reopen the government before it's an issue. Mm-hmm. I don't have any information about when it could become a problem for Curiosity.
Mm-hmm. So when you take a broader view, so you have a lot of colleagues, so the whole United States has a lot, a very large science program. So how does it affect the countrywide research?
It's extraordinarily damaging to a lot of the research. My work is flexible and can be postponed. But there are things like lab animals and a lot of biological research that will take a year to recover from a few weeks of government shutdown. Animals live, and they when they're not being properly cared for and managed, it can cause irreversible problems. The other huge impact is on environmental monitoring. Most environmental monitoring requires regular observations. And when you don't have those, when you miss weeks, months, years, in the case of Antarctica, some observations can't be made this year at all at this point, it becomes very difficult to separate out the random fluctuations from the long-term trends. And it's very clear that we're in a time of very rapid climate change, and we really need to develop policies in response to that. And so I would say that one of the biggest impacts of the government shutdown is the damage to our understanding how environments are changing and our inability to monitor them with government support at this point.
So these are all very, very short-term impacts of the shutdown. But science and even projects like a Mars rover are very long-term projects. So these financial shortcomings haven't been there since yesterday. So how is the long-term planning already? How was it already disturbed?
Yeah. So the long-term science funding in the United States has been going down relative to what the science community has been trying to do for about a decade. And one of the examples of that is NASA pulling out of the collaboration with ESA on the ExoMars rover. And that's a fairly recent change. There's also a much more systemic problem. The National Science Foundation provides most of the research funds for a lot of the physical science research. And for many of those programs, the funding rate for proposals is below 10%. And basically, when you get to that low level of funding, it becomes extremely difficult for researchers to actually do the research and make the discoveries they want to. Rather, they're spending a huge amount of time writing proposals. And based on my experience reviewing proposals and that of many of my colleagues, about a third of the ones that are submitted are good science, and 15 to 20% are both good science and really well thought out, well written proposals. And so there's just a very systemic underfunding of the science. And that feeds into technology and the economy very directly in some cases. Even when you're looking at research that doesn't have an obvious technological feed forward into the economy, often a few years down the line, those results can lead to some new innovation. My favorite example from history of this is that electricity was once considered completely esoteric research. Lightning was a scary thing, and trying to understand it didn't seem to have any practical applications. But now electricity is sort of the foundation of our economy and our society.
So when you look into the future, this would be my final question. What is your feeling? So, do you still have a bit of optimism inside you?
I am intrinsically an optimistic person, and many of the scientists I know will do the best science they can, even without funding. There's just something about asking questions and trying to answer them. And I also think that there's space for scientists and other concerned citizens to try to make a difference in the politics. When you have a challenge like the government shutdown, it's also a call to action. And maybe we can use this to improve our government and improve our value of science, including by funding it more and also involving more citizens in understanding it.
Do you have the feeling that the arguments from science is here in Washington right now?
No, so I don't think many lawmakers listen to science. There are a few that do, but I think that they ought to, because science and technology is the foundation of our economy.
Okay. So thank you very much for your time. And yeah, it was quite interesting. Maybe we can repeat this someday in the future. Ja, das war es, mein Gespräch mit Dawn Sumner. Zugegebenermaßen etwas kurz, um jetzt irgendwo einzusteigen, aber ich wollte wirklich einen kleinen Schnappschuss von ihr einholen, wie sie die aktuelle Situation der Wissenschaftslandschaft in den USA einschätzt. Und Dawn hatte jetzt nicht so viel Zeit, länger mit mir zu reden. Das werden wir bei gegebener Gelegenheit sicher nochmal nachholen. Euch danke ich soweit fürs Zuhören. Wie immer freue ich mich über Feedback, auch gerne zu einem potenziellen Gespräch in der Zukunft. Und bis zum nächsten Mal.